Another exclusive live session with the Hype Magazine.
You need to stop what you're doing. Pay attention.
World famous
Hype Magazine. Going down right now.
Hey, welcome everybody to another live session with the Hype Magazine. I'm Jerry Dobie, editor-in-chief. And today, we have NFL Green Bay, former NFL Green Bay Packer, Christopher Darkins, on with us today for a special discussion. Mr. Darkins is part of the leading congressionally recognized prison reform activist outfit called Y'all Life, and he is the community chief leader of Y'all Life's Criminal and Economic Justice Syndicate, located in Houston. They specialize in helping African-Americans who've been wrongly accused and convicted and have successfully gotten members out of jail and received a number of dismissals, with many more in the pipeline. Currently, CEGS is aiding Gucci Mane's label artist Rallo in his current drug conspiracy charges. It's a ridiculous case. I'm going to say that at the outset. And we're happy to have you here, Christopher, to fill us in on Y'all Life and what's going on with Rallo's case. Thank you for being with us today.
Jerry, thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'm really excited to be on the Hype Magazine's live session. It's a very honorable thing that you allow me to be on here. I appreciate that, brother.
Oh, it's amazing. Thank you. So let's get to the basics. Who is Y'all Life, and what role does the Criminal and Economic Justice Syndicate play in issues, hot topic issues today, specifically the mass incarceration of African Americans for nonsense?
Yeah, well, so Jay, I'll start by just giving a little context of Y'all Life. I always tell people that, you know, 600 years ago, you know, we hailed from great kingdoms in West Africa, the Mali Kingdom, Songhai, Ghana, et cetera. And, you know, we were royalty for all practical intents and purposes. In fact, there was a Congolese king who wrote to the Portuguese and essentially said, hey, you know, we don't want you guys to come back because you're taking our royals and you're sending them abroad. And, you know, when you really listen to that, what you realize is that, you know, the royal class from Africa got sent to, you know, the New World. And Y'all Life's essential function is to kind of reconstitute that royalty and resume leadership, because we believe we're the leadership the world's been waiting for. The Criminal and Economic Justice Center specifically is the tip of the spear for Negro self-defense. And what we do is we intellectually weaponize African-Americans, and we, you know, provide necessary support when they find themselves in situations that they've been subjected to the criminal justice system.
Mm. Are there any limitations as to what type of cases you guys involve yourself in?
You know, we have a high degree of concentration in the strict liability cases, things like drug offenses. You know, it's like the name says, Criminal and Economic Justice Syndicate, and economic, right? There's Europeans who are being lauded on the front of Forbes magazines and all these other featured spaces for being the next marijuana billionaires. Mm. Yet, you know, we find our people being thrown in prison for, you know, similar type activity. So we find ourselves in working a lot in those type of cases. But then also more increasingly, we're seeing a lot on just common law offenses where, you know, there's an injured party, but people are being picked up off the street and charged in indictments that don't allege any facts that support the conclusions of law that the charges are being presented as.
Mm.
So, you know, we find ourselves working through that.
That's a sweeping problem, you know, and the federal government is getting more and more involved. They're a perpetrator of this. They're snatching cases out of the state's hands and employing, you know, these brutal tactics judicially from the federal landscape, you know, against things that may be legal in a state or at least non-criminal, you know, misdemeanor becomes a major felony because the feds have picked it up and they don't agree with the state's laws. And they don't give full faith and credit as they're supposed to, according to constitutional amendments. So we bring that to a current case that the Y'all Life Project is handling. It's one of Gucci Mane's label artists named Rallo, who was living the embodiment of "To whom much is given, much is required." Let's talk about his case. And as I understand it, the young man was buying back the block, so to speak, in actually literal form, providing housing and stipends for people who were less fortunate.
Absolutely. And you know as well as I do that that's unacceptable. You know, anybody who's, you know, taking the position that, you know, we can change the conditions of our communities by, you know, investing in them and investing not only our capital, but our, our finances, but our labor and our efforts, you know, it's a threat to the system, threat to the status quo. Mm. So, you know, when we heard about his case and it was brought to us, we, you know, essentially said, you know, this is something that, that Y'all Life has to stand up for. At the time, he was not a Y'all Life member citizen, but after, you know, a little bit of discussion and dialogue about what Y'all Life was about and the things that he was trying to accomplish, his household, you know, joined the community. And, you know, we have an obligation to, you know, support our community members when we find them in these type of situations, whether they incur the liability prior to coming in or after. You know, it's our objective, it's our mission to put the full weight and support of the organization behind it. And, you know, you made a very good point when you talked about, you know, feds stealing cases from the state. But, you know, this is a system that they've executed across many different industries. I mean, if you look at it from a basketball standpoint, it's like, you know, when you trade a player. Now, you have these players that entire industries are built off of, stadiums are built off of them. The broadcasting industry is built off of them. So why would the prison industrial complex be any different? When the states have too many players and the feds need some, they go draft them from the state.
I think there was a case in history, well, recent history, where I discussed the fact that the federal prison system being privatized, the CAA or CCA, which is a private corporation that handles the detention centers for the federal government, they said, "We'll take over your contract and handle your prisons, but you have to guarantee us at least 80% occupancy at all times." And the stealing of cases from the state is a manifestation of the federal government meeting that obligation of having an 80% housing rate or population rate for these prisons. And it's devastating. And then you mentioned the entertainment complex being a part of that. A little known fact is that the investment syndicate that owns a majority stake of these private prisons is populated by several of the large record companies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a vicious circle and a vicious cycle. They say the world is small, but that world is even smaller. This is not my interview. Let me stop. So,
but Jerry, I mean, you're right on point, right? I mean, literally. You know, all of these systems are interconnected, and they all work together. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about in Y'all Life in one of our collective conscious work groups is that, you know, culture is how a community solves its problems and meets its needs, right? Europeans very long ago essentially knew that they were on land that wasn't very fertile, They couldn't feed the masses and the growing masses, so they explored and conquered. So they developed an imperialistic culture. And in order to protect that imperialistic culture, they built up, economic systems, political systems, criminal justice systems, right, that maintain their power, right? And they use those entertainment systems, they use those economic systems, they use those political systems and those criminal justice systems to, eliminate any potential threat to their supremacy. And that's what they have viewed Rallo as, is his threat to their supremacy. He's a young man who, in his music, was, ox shit, pox shit, right? 12 can't stop shit. I mean, that's a reference to, the criminal justice community. And, he essentially was bucking the system. He said, look, this concept of people having to work to live is not acceptable. I'm going to go out and buy an apartment complex. Now you can live. You have a human right for dignity to live. You have a place to live. And now you can contribute to your community. You can focus on building us. Of course, they don't want that to happen, right? So then he becomes the poster child for what happens when you don't assimilate, right? And we see that as unacceptable, right? And we're going to fight tooth and nail. I mean, we look at this case, and we see a classic example of the unconstitutional application of federal law. And there's a number of different case precedents that that essentially – dictate that such is the case. And what you're seeing here is that you have a government that includes prosecutors and thus far courts that refuse to recognize that fact. Now ultimately, in this particular case, we've raised a number of different issues and advised them on how to address them. And we're in that stage now where it's a fight. I mean, it's literally a fight, but it's an intellectual fight. Right, it's using the words of their forefathers to help them understand how this system has skewed the law in such a way that it is being used as a weapon against the very citizens who built this country.
So we have criminals who perpetrated some things, got ahead, and then made laws so that nobody else could do the same thing. And those who said, oh, I'm going to come up and use the system, they're like, no, you're not going to use the system that we created for ourselves. And if we can't get you on a direct charge, such as the case of Rallo, we'll say you're conspiring. So he's conspiring to do something good. And when did that become illegal? I would like to know.
I mean, that's a legitimate question, right? I mean, you're talking about, you're talking about conspiracy charges that, in this particular case, are an infringement on the fundamental rights that the Constitution, both states and the federal government, was meant to protect. Mm-hmm. And now what you do in some cases is you have, a federal judiciary that is trying to steal power away from the states. Mm-hmm. And they've been effective in doing it because by and large, it affects the communities that don't have the ability to fight back.
Correct.
And that's what essentially Y'all Life is doing, is we're reconvening this royalty and this intellectual caste, this working class, and we're fighting back now. We're going to bring our intellect to the table, and to the point that you don't adhere to your own words, then we have to look at it and say, okay, well, this system clearly does not work for us, and rather than trying to work within it, we are going to have to work outside of it.
Speaking of which, you guys are seeking to help pass H.R. House Rule 493 that was put forward to the 116th Congress on the Sensible Enforcement of Cannabis Act of 2019. Which I believe the marijuana or the cannabis, they're trying to say that Rallo had a drug empire based on the cannabis community, or Controlled Substance Act. Let's talk about the activity that Y'all Life and the community legal team there is putting forth to help make this thing a law where the Attorney General has to, you know, stop wasting time on things that something that's being legalized, it's sweeping the nation as a legalized product. Let's talk about H.R. 493.
Right. So H.R. 493 is really just covering up a loophole. It's actually, when you uncover what their scheme is, they have to figure out a way to, you know, curtail the scheme so that the courts don't come in and just eliminate them from doing it, which then creates liability. So I'll be a little more clear with that. The Attorney General has discretion. The U.S. attorneys have discretion in what they deem to be prosecutable offenses. Mm-hmm. Now, we've been raising these constitutional arguments ever since my case back 2.5 years ago. And I actually beat my case based upon these arguments, but they'll never admit it because they never answered any motion. They just decided they were going to dismiss the case. Mm-hmm. So rather than you know, have a court say this is not the appropriate application of the law, which would then acknowledge the fact that for the last 40 years, 80% of the brothers who have been prosecuted on federal drug charges have been prosecuted unconstitutionally, what they'll say is that we're going to curtail the attorney general's ability to enforce it in specific application. So they're essentially repealing the law by saying you can no longer enforce it in these state instances, right? Mm. Rather than acknowledging the fact that they've been unconstitutionally applying it in these state cases. Because then you got to let a whole bunch of people out of jail, and that 80% quota goes bad.
Ha, then the 80% quota goes completely down the drain.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the federal government is holding on to something. I mean, it's their way of holding on to a way to get around and circumvent the laws of the state. So my question then becomes, when Coca-Cola puts out their cannabis-based product, into the open market in states that it's legal, do they then go and raid the corporate offices of Coca-Cola and their parent companies for conspiracy and RICO acts as they're making billions of dollars by accessing the other loopholes?
Mm-hmm.
But no,
mm-hmm.
They're still messing with the man in the street who's trying to take his $10,000 and throw it out to the homeless or provide a roof over their head. And once again, so let's talk about how CEJS has assisted with motions and development of legal argument for Rallo. And let's talk about where we are today. Are there any updates in this young man's case?
So, you know, I tell people we're in the at war stages right now. And, you know, we've advised the defendants, because when we look at these type of situations, we essentially look at the entire scope of the household. And so anybody who's on this indictment, you know, we're willing to consult with and discuss potential strategies. So one of the things that we focused on is really just the jurisdictional aspect of that. Some motions have been filed in that regard. The government refused to answer the motions, and the court has used the process through the magistrate judge where they've, you know, have denied these motions at this point. So, you know, now the next step is to make the determination whether or not, you know, we continue to pursue that at the court level, or if they want to pursue that at a at the circuit court level, the appeals court level. So right now those, I think, the kind of the decisions that are being waded through right now. But, you know, the fight definitely continues, and the best way to address the unconstitutional application of laws is definitively through the court system. Force them to own up to, you know, the things that they're doing. And we're confident that, you know, at the end of the day, the 11th Circuit, in all of its infinite wisdom, will make the appropriate decision, where a trial court judge, you know, they understand that what they're saying is not the end-all be-all.
Now, in the federal system, there's like this three-prong kind of situation. You mentioned the magistrate. The magistrate is like going to arraignment court And the person who sets conditions of release or bail and things like that. And then you have the trial court judge. Then you have the appeals circuit. And then, of course, the ultimate, you have the U.S. Supreme Court. But you mentioned the magistrate is the one who's refusing to hear. So you now have to go to the appeals process.
Well, so, yeah, I'm sorry, Jerry, go ahead.
No. It really was a question.
Okay, so the magistrate judge is essentially like the district court judge's handyman, right? He does all the light work. So when the district court judge wants to make a decision that he doesn't want to be final, he hands it off to the magistrate judge to make what is technically a recommendation. Now, when he makes that recommendation, if it's not objected to within 14 days, it then becomes the default answer, right? And it becomes unappealable. So, you know, if you are an unscrupulous district court judge and you don't want to have something put on the record that could be overturned, you'll tell your magistrate judge to do it, and then you'll give them the 14 days. And if they don't respond in the 14 days, then it becomes unquestionable, right? So, you know, it's like, you know, it's like the man who does your dirty work for you. But then there's also measures that you can take in the appellate courts. You can if a motion is denied and it has to do with the authority or the jurisdiction of the court, you can file a writ of prohibition with the 11th Circuit and ask them, I want you to review the matter and you tell us what you think. Either this court should be restrained, which means the 11th Circuit will go down and say, hey, look, you need to dismiss this case. Or they'll say, you know, we think it's valid. And here's the reasons why. So, you know, there's a ton of options, a ton of tools that most defendants aren't aware of. There's a lot of procedure that isn't in the rules of procedure. These are, you know, procedures based upon judicial decisions that exist.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have a deep knowledge in that type of stuff. So we work with people to help them understand, like, okay, you know, I understand you have an attorney who's counseling you, but let me give it to you in plain English. And then you can have a better ability to go to your attorney and then discuss with him what your options are and what course of action you'd like for him to take.
Okay. So I have to ask a fundamental question then, you know, how does one become a part of the Yah Life community?
So Yah Life is a very simple process. I mean, quite candidly, as an ADOS, an African descendant of slaves, you are already a member of Yah Life. It is your nation. And all you have to do is register and enroll. And the registration process is simple. You go to www.yahlife.com. You fill out the Learn More form. And then someone reaches out to you. In our community, we have obligations. We have responsibilities. So every household contributes $50 a month to the nation. And they commit to 16 hours of community service a quarter. And there's a number of different institutions that we have within the Yah Life sphere that help coordinate that community service activity so it's directed and focused on building wealth and prosperity in our communities. So it's a, you know, like I said, it's a very simple process.
So now, are there, is this a national, I mean, does it touch every state in the republic? I won't call it a union at this time. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to remain editorially bland, but I can't. Say that again.
I said that statement indicates a knowledge of law.
So are there representatives in every state?
Yeah, when we're a global organization. I mean, we have global, what we consider global, which means, you know, Afro-Americans across the world are a part of the Yah Life organization. We have an embassy in Mali. We're developing an embassy in Cameroon. We have members scattered throughout the United States. And, you know, we'll eventually be moving into some of the Latin American countries as well, where there's a lot of Africans that have been displaced over there through slavery as well.
Okay. Is there anything that you wanted to cover that I may have neglected? I could keep you on all day. I promise this could be an all-day conversation. I'm enjoying it. But I want to be educated, and I want our audience to be educated. And I don't want to miss anything that you might consider pertinent.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jerry, the thing that I consider to be most important for our communities is to become educated on the tools that exist within the Constitution that protect your rights, right? It's one thing to know your rights, but at the end of the day, it comes down to being able to adjudicate your rights. And one of the fundamental classes that we have when you join the law community is a natural law class, which essentially breaks down the Constitution for you, goes into case law and demonstrates to you, this is how you enforce this right. This is where this right exists. Even though it may not plainly be articulated in the Constitution itself, here's the case law that tells you what these things mean. Because a lot of the times, specifically in this particular case with Rallo, you know, we're being charged with crimes for laws that don't actually apply to us. And anybody can jump on PACER and they can pull down one of the dismissal motions that have been filed and then compare them to the judge's response and see that, you know, they are hell-bent, intent on, at least at the first level of the judicial system, on, you know, just ignoring any constitutional rights that exist.
That's not good. Okay. Now, are there any petitions or public activities that the general public outside of Y'all Life can do to help or lend their names, weight to action in this case?
Well, what I would suggest is there's two things. One, you know, we're looking at filing a public interest writ, which essentially will address the unlawful application of these laws by forcing the prosecutors in these courts to be more specific as to the elements of the offense that actually take place in the states and why they apply, why the law applies. So that's one thing that people can sign on once we get to that stage. But secondly, you know, what I would say is that Hype Magazine could very easily put on a symposium. And, you know, we'd be more than happy to contribute intellectual and financial capital in order to make that happen so that we can educate people on these practices. Because the more people know, the more people understand and they have a strong foundation, understand the case law and how it applies, then the better off we are and the stronger they're willing to fight for the cause. When you don't know what your basis is, you're not a strong advocate for anybody. So that's a call to action. Yeah, call to action.
I'm down. You don't understand. You're talking to somebody who wears two Panthers on his body, and I love that. So, Your Honor, I meant what I said. I wear both my Panthers proudly, one over my heart and one on the left side of my body. The left side is the right side. Anyway, I'm just going to leave it like that. I'm down, and we will most definitely love to have that conversation on how we can do something public, such as a symposium, to bring these issues to a greater light. And most certainly, you have a friend and an advocate here at the Hype Magazine. I'm the editor-in-chief, and I say that we, as part of our editorial integrity, have a charge to tell the truth and make certain that the blinders are pulled off and the smoke is cleared out, and to help throw an alarm clock in the graveyard.
There you go.
I'm definitely down for that. All right, the Hype Magazine Live Session, and we can definitely talk about that more offline from this piece to make it happen. The Hype Magazine Live Sessions, we have Mr. Christopher Darkins, who is a leading congressionally recognized prison reform activist, and he's the community chief leader of Y'all Life. We've been talking about the mistreatment and mishandling of our brother, Rallo, is he still incarcerated, or have they at least given him bail, an ankle bracelet, something to get him out from behind the wall?
He's still behind the wall. He's still incarcerated. And, you know, when a brother has resources That's what they want to do. They want to stranglehold you. They want to take a hold of your accounts. They want to lock you in a cell, give you limited access to your family, your support system, and to some degree your attorneys. Now, his attorneys, I think, have been pretty responsive because they're paid attorneys, but by and large, those are the conditions they place you in because it softens you up, right? So, you know, I don't understand why it is he doesn't have bail, because he's been on probation before. He's never violated. So it's ridiculous for me as to why they would, you know, consider letting giving him bail. I mean, other than the fact that they are trying to cripple him in some sort of way.
We're going to leave it at that for this time. I look forward to having you back, and let's get some more updates. Dime Magazine Live Sessions. We're out for now.